debate. He is now confined at the State Correctional Institution at Mahanoy, Pennsylvania. And today was produced by Askia Muhammad at the United States Capitol. Studio engineering by David Kelly. I'm Askia Muhammad. The Raucous Caucus starts now. Thank you for listening.
WPFW Washington.
Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine sitting here with...
The system is broken. Take to the strip.
Oh, wait a minute. He's not here.
No, no, Terry's not here. We don't have
Garland,
to say that.
Garland Nixon, I guess.
I just, you know, he wasn't here in physical form, so I felt the spirit of Terry coming over me.
Sagacity has left the building.
It was the spirit of sagacity coming over me when Terry wasn't here.
Well, we can be calm now. Our revolutionary is gone.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But we do have a very important topic tonight, and it's immigration. And if we were never going to talk about immigration, we wouldn't talk about it this week. Because it is definitely all over the news this week in all kinds of ways. It started with President Obama giving a very special speech on immigration, really changing U.S. policy, emphasizing that we were not going to deport people who came here when they were children and haven't broken the law since. Mitt Romney gave a speech on immigration where he spent an hour saying nothing, which is hard to do.
But Mitt Romney's really good at it.
Yeah, but it's really hard to spend an hour and not say anything. But he did it.
He's been doing it for about 20 years now.
I guess he has practice in it. Then, of course, just yesterday, the United States Supreme Court rules the vast part of Arizona's immigration law unconstitutional, which I'm proud to say I predicted right here on this show. We'll talk about the reasons why.
I refer to them as the Supreme Council.
The Supreme Council.
Kind of like the guys that run Iran.
Or Iran.
Black robes. The only thing they need is beards.
Sometimes at this point it surprises me when they do the right thing. I mean, when they actually follow the law, I'm like, whoa, what's the catch? Why are they following the law? We'll talk about that.
Yeah, what's in it for corporations?
Exactly.
That's the first thing I think.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's cheaper labor. Because there's so many parts of this to discuss. There's the DREAM Act, which of course is something that the administration has tried and failed to get passed over Republican filibusters. There's a question of how it plays in the fall. Many observers believe that the Latino vote will be the vote that determines the difference in this election. They're the most persuadable, apparently.
If the GOP has their way, there won't be any of them voting, in fact.
Well, that's true.
You got to have an ID with, 10 pictures of, the pictures of their entire family going back four generations in order to vote.
Apparently. A grandfather, great-great-grandfather clause that you might call it.
Right.
Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, the Republican Tea Party guy who everyone thinks is at the top of Mitt Romney's vice president list, he went on the Meet the Press, and that was really fun. We'll talk about that, too, how he managed to say nothing, which is really hard because he wrote a whole book dealing with immigration, and he's having a real hard time because he is Latino, and at the same time, he is Republican, and it's so interesting watching him contradict himself. It's almost like he imploded with his two sides. Because the intersection of Latino and Republican is practically a null set, and that's kind Marco
of,
Rubio.
Kind of like a chicken who works for KFC.
Exactly.
It's kind of hard serving a three-piece box,
It's really, really hard. But I want to talk about that, too. There's so many different elements of this. So let's start with, the past and then move on to the present. And, of course, in the next the last half hour, we're going to have people call in at 202.
588-0893,
and you can join us in the discussion in the second half hour. I also wanted to announce something else that's really special. Because Thursday is coming an even more important Supreme Court decision, the one on the probably signature accomplishment of the President Obama's administration, where I fear they're going to strike it down on the Affordable Health Care Act. I've been invited, along with David Schuster, to do a live video commentary at 9 a.m. that people can get on my website, marklevinetalk.com, or on the Current TV website at current.com.
Oh, great.
So you can actually watch live analysis. We're actually going to be at the Supreme Court, and we're going to have people run into the building, grab out the big, thick, you know, opinion, which will probably be 100 pages long, and you can watch me physically, because it'll be video. You can actually physically watch me quickly, madcaply, run through the decision and try to figure out what it's all about before CNN or MSNBC or Fox do it first. So I'll try to get the scoop on that.
So what site's that on?
That's it's going to be on my website, marklevinetalk.com. It'll also be on the Current TV website, which is current.com, and that'll be 9 a.m. in the morning. The opinion is likely to come down at 10 a.m. So David Schuster and I will be talking about all kinds of things from 9 to 10, but you can rest assured I'll be there with my pocket constitution in
you
the 95 degree.
I don't think you'll be needing the constitution on Thursday.
I may have to light it on fire. I don't know. But I just wanted to announce that and hope that a number of us join us on the web. Or, frankly, if you want to come out to the United States Supreme Court, we'd love to have you. You're welcome to join us out there. It'll be a madhouse.
I think by Thursday, if you walk into the Supreme Court carrying a constitution, it'll burst into flames. Kind of like vampires walk into a church and they burst into flames. Anywhere near the Supreme Court, it will just spontaneously combust.
That makes sense. Romney talks about self-deportation. In this case, it's the Constitution's self-immolation.
That's it, right.
That's what will happen. All right, so there's so many different elements of this. Let's start. We probably should start with the Constitution, because the Constitution of the United States requires the United States Congress to set a uniform law on naturalization, which is a fancy word for citizenship, basically. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense, because remember, the founders were trying to take disparate states and bind them into one nation, and it did not make sense to have New York have one immigration policy and Georgia have another and Virginia have another. Frankly, they couldn't agree on slavery at the time. Georgia wanted to have slaves immigrate. And New York did not. And so they decided that they needed a uniform policy. But that uniform policy has extended all the way to the present day, and really, up until Arizona passed its bill a couple years ago, it really wasn't questioned. People seemed to understand that Arizona couldn't have a different immigration law from Utah or Vermont or North Dakota, because were we going to have a place where you're legally resident in one state, but you move across state lines and you're not? Suddenly the states act more like countries.
Yeah, the next thing you know, they're going to be levying tariffs on, you know, foreign commerce.
Exactly. One of the interesting things that there's so much to talk about with this, but when in reading the decision of the United States Supreme Court, Scalia gave an angry dissent, because, of course, he supported the Arizona
bill. Because he's an angry
bill.
Man. You know? Every dissent from him on either side could be considered an angry dissent an angry opinion.
He is kind of an angry man. But he said, if this decision goes through, declaring Arizona's law unconstitutional, we'll no longer be able to call Arizona a sovereign state. And I didn't want to break it to Scalia that in the Civil War issue was resolved.
Yeah, it's not a sovereign, independent.
That was an issue in 1861, but by 1865, it had been pretty much resolved. No, states are not sovereign. The United States of America is sovereign, but the individual states are trumped by the federal government.
You know what he was really saying? Here's what he was saying. It's something we don't talk about. I'm not going to get away from it, but he was saying, I am a Confederate. Not a neo-Confederate. Ain't nothing neo about him and his group. He was saying, I am a modern-day Confederate.
Right. That's
exactly what he was saying.
What he was saying. And it was really amazing for him to – what was interesting to me was not just his – impassioned plea that Arizona was a sovereign state.
Or his blood-curdling scream.
It was more the fact that he was so insulted that anyone would suggest that the individual 50 states of the United States were not sovereign and actually were part of the Union. He very much, I mean, there was Jefferson Davis was right there, crying. The ghost of Jefferson Davis is living in Antonin Scalia somewhere.
Well, you know how, you know the old saying, if the law is on your side, argue the law. If the facts are on your side, argue the facts. If neither the facts or the laws on your side, bang on the table.
Bang on the table and scream loudly.
Yeah, and he was banging on the table.
And he certainly was. Okay, so that's the Constitution. Then Arizona, a couple years back, passes a really bad law for lots of reasons. For one thing, one of the things in the law, and this is the most controversial, is it allowed, originally, in the original version of the law, it allowed police to stop anyone on reasonable suspicion that they were an illegal immigrant. They didn't have to commit any crime. They didn't have to speed. They didn't have to be pulled over. They didn't even have to jaywalk. You could be going and seeing ice cream, getting ice cream in the ice cream store.
Eating a burrito.
Eating and you see somebody. So you go to the Mexican restaurant.
You're right.
And you see someone eating a burrito, and you're like, that kid looks Latino. Let me see your papers, 7-year-old.
Oh, but add this to it.
Yeah.
But it was a crime if you didn't demonstrate
Arizona
that you were.
Made
you
it a just, crime.
If you didn't have your papers,
that's
if
right.
you couldn't show that you weren't an illegal immigrant, that in itself was a crime. So you could be an American citizen, but just because you couldn't prove that you were an illegal immigrant, you had committed a crime.
And let me give you a specific example done by someone working for the infamous Sheriff Joe Arpaio.
Sheriff Joe.
It's a sheriff of Maricopa County, which includes Phoenix, and is by far the largest county in Arizona. It's like half the people in Arizona live in the Phoenix area because the rest is desert.
Yeah.
Joe Arpaio is actually being sued by the Justice Department for racial profiling. He has a long history of it. But there's an example of a California trucker who was born in California. And he was
close to Mexico.
It borders Mexico. And I forget his name, but I have to admit it was something like Gonzalez or Ramirez or something like that. I don't remember his name. It was a classic Mexican American name. Anyway, he's driving through because he's a trucker.
Or as Joe Arpaio would call it, prima facie evidence of a crime.
Well,
that a crime has been committed.
That's what I'm going to get to because I need to look up and remember his name because I actually talked about this on Fox News. But he's driving through Arizona because he's a trucker.
Yeah.
And that's part of his business.
Awful suspicious.
And it's hard to get out of California without going through Arizona, Nevada, or Oregon.
But illegal aliens also drive through Arizona.
Think about it. And I don't remember whether he was stopped for speeding or not, but I do know that I think he was speeding. Oh no, you know, as if we all haven't gone speeding one time or another. And the police pulls him over and asks for his driver. He shows his trucker's license and everything. And he says, "Can you show me your proof that you're an American citizen?" And he says, "I got a driver's license."
He got
license.
A CDL, a commercial driver's
He's got
license.
A commercial driver's license.
How are you
going to
get that without
And of course, in some 15 states in the United States, you're not required to be a citizen to get a driver's license.
Yeah, but not a commercial driver's license,
right.
A CDL.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, that as well. Anyway, the driver's license wasn't sufficient, and the guy demanded his birth certificate. And he said, "I don't carry my birth certificate with me."
Yeah, that's a crime.
So they said, "Come with us."
Yeah.
They put him in jail for 4 hours as he frantically called his wife in California, who managed to scrounge up the birth certificate and finally fax it to the Arizona officials in the fax machine to show that, yes, he was born in Bakersfield, California. And then they let him go after serving 4 hours for driving while Latino. I guess so it is. Well, basically, this Arizona law in its original form would allow anyone to stop anyone, like I said, just walking on the street. Then they modified it to say, okay, you have to be committing a crime. But remember, a crime can be speeding, can be jaywalking, can be a failure. I mean, you're a cop. I mean,
can
you're an ex-cop.
Be,
can't you stop somebody for having a broken taillight?
You can stop someone for crossing the white line and failing to use their, basically changing lanes without using a turn signal.
Okay. Or like at every intersection, there is this crosswalk, and some people might go a half inch
one
over the, that crosswalk.
One of the issues when you talk about racial profiling, because many times police departments will argue it wasn't racial profiling because we have a legal right. In fact, failing to use the turn signal while you change lanes is in fact a crime, and so we had a right to use it. However, the issue becomes selective enforcement.
Right.
So
plenty of white people change lanes without turning.
But for some reason,
the
only time you pull somebody over for that is when they're black or Latino.
Exactly.
Or whatever the case may be, whatever it is. So the argument, even that the reason for pulling someone over was legal in itself, still doesn't mean it's not racial profiling if you utilize selective enforcement
Absolutely.
For that particular law.
Okay, so the Arizona law is passed.
My old ACLU days coming back.
It says you have to have reasonable suspicion someone's an illegal immigrant. So everyone says, well, that's because someone looks Latino, duh. And the governor says, no, Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona, no. We don't racially profile. We just mean reasonable suspicion that someone's illegal. So they asked the governor, my favorite thing in the press conference, they said, okay, Governor Brewer, what would constitute? Give me an example of reasonable suspicion that someone is not here legally. and she couldn't come up with anything.
No,
what's she gonna
because
say?
Because anything she said would have damned her to
an accent. Well, lots of Americans have an accent. The color of your skin, plenty of Americans. A Mexican surname. Yeah. I mean, what's she gonna name? What's she gonna name? Some stereotype? I mean, too many people in a truck. I mean, what's she gonna
name?
There
was nothing that she could say.
She could not articulate.
Right. There is nothing you can articulate that couldn't clearly be shown to be unconstitutional.
So here's this conservative governor who's been pushing this law, who's so proud of this law, and she couldn't think of a reasonable suspicion. The only thing I could think of, and I was actually trying to think, you know, as a lawyer, you try to think, imagine both sides. You could have a guy say to the cop, hey, cop, I'm an illegal immigrant. All right, that would be something that would cause reasonable suspicion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's unlikely to happen.
Right.
But that's about the only example I could think of that wasn't some kind of profiling.
He could be holding up a sign.
I'm from Mexico.
Yeah, illegal immigrant with an arrow pointing down towards the top of his head.
That's true, because obviously a Mexican flag wouldn't be enough. There's plenty of Irish Americans that have the Irish flag.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he could have had a Mexican flag. Yeah. Plenty of Americans, citizens, celebrate Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do? Clearly, it's not going to Taco Bell. That's not enough. So she couldn't articulate it.
Well,
anyway.
And keep in mind something. And it has to be racial profiling, because with anything that would be considered, how about this, Latino-y, that someone would have.
Right, that's racial profiling.
They would have to look the point, because let's face it, Mark, if I walked over, Mike Tyson walked over and had a sign that said, I'm a Mexican.
They probably wouldn't believe him.
They wouldn't believe him.
Exactly.
You would have to look Latino also, which in itself
The law isn't supposed to be focused on Mexicans.
Yeah,
what about Canadians? What about people
can't
from
trust
England?
Them, yeah.
One of the things that people a lot of times
don't
realize.
About those British. I think they're here to do it. Look, 1812. They burned the White House in 1812.
And those Canucks, they seem so nice. But yes, they did. They invaded Detroit.
That's it.
And maybe they should have kept it. I don't know.
Yeah,
but,
no, we should have given them Texas. How about Texas? Let's keep Detroit. We'll give them Texas.
Fair enough. Anyway, so this law had problems from the get-go. But, of course, Arizona very much supported it. And I, of course, went on all these conservative networks saying – the law is obviously unconstitutional. And the reason it's obviously unconstitutional actually is not because of racial profiling. That's something, that's a good liberal argument that you and I get implicitly. But there's actually a simpler constitutional argument, one that should appeal even to conservatives, and that is, under the Constitution, immigration belongs to the federal government.
Yep.
It's simple, it's cut and dry, you don't have to go into all the racial stuff, it's just very simple. It's an argument even a conservative could love.
Because it doesn't have anything to do. The
with
other
race.
Arguments have to do with the application
That's
of
right.
the law, with the constitutionality of how you apply an equal protection under the law.
Right.
As opposed to, wait a minute, you just can't write a law
right.
that usurps the power of the federal government.
Exactly. So, the president, the Justice Department, President Obama challenged the Arizona law on four separate counts. And three of the four were completely struck down. The idea that Arizona could make it a crime when the federal government doesn't make it a crime to be here illegally. And by the way, it is not a crime. But people don't realize it. It is not a crime to be in this country without papers. Did you know that? A lot of people don't realize that. Even Chief Justice Roberts admitted it in the opinion. You are deportable, but deportation is not criminal. It's actually
right, it's non-punitive.
It's a civil offense.
Yep.
It's a civil offense like fining you for smoking in a bar
or
speeding.
Or a traffic ticket.
Exactly.
God forbid a parking ticket.
A parking ticket,
God forbid
right,
you
that's
live
right.
in D.C. or drive in D.C., you will certainly understand.
I've had my share of civil infractions.
Yeah.
But it really
I'd rather be deported than face half of the red light tickets that I've gotten in D.C.
I've challenged quite a few of them, and I've lost quite a few. Anyway, the point is that Arizona can't make a crime what the federal government didn't make a crime. So Obama won virtually everything he tried to do. The one thing that he didn't win was this application question that you raised, Garland, which is, we can't say they've applied it in a way that involves racial profiling because they never applied
right,
it.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they got an injunction to stop the law from ever going into effect. But the court said, when you apply it, we'll be watching carefully.
And that's when you can bring it back, as soon as you can apply it.
I can't imagine how it can be applied without racial profiling unless everyone that stopped has a sign that says I'm an illegal immigrant.
Right.
Other than saying so to the cop.
Or you apply it to every citizen of the United
States. Well,
every person that you see.
Yes,
when the cop
person.
Walks out on the beat,
right.
everybody that walks by him, he grabs him, he just stands, he
Show
doesn't even really
papers.
Get out of the door. Even other cops that walk by,
that's
he asks
right,
them
right.
for the paper.
That's true.
Line
except there's a problem because citizens aren't required to carry papers.
You're right.
So all you have to do, if you're a legal immigrant in Arizona, is just say I'm a citizen,
but if you're
and they must let you go.
But if you're suspected of it.
But based on what?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
can't articulate what.
But as I said, but if they apply it to everyone so that it would be constitutional.
The law would be repealed like that.
We're running into a paradox here.
Exactly. The law would be repealed like that. So this was a full course win by the administration. I think this is because it's all dealing with immigration. We need to talk about the DREAM Act and the politics of that, and then we'll throw it open to our callers and let them share whatever they want. So the DREAM Act, for those that don't know, is an act that says that you shouldn't punish the children for the sins of the parents. Most of immigrants come to America seeking the American dream. Let's face it, 97% of Americans, citizens don't have ancestors from the Americas.
Holy moly, Mark. I thought the DREAM Act was that the Republicans wanted to actually punish people for sexually explicit dreams.
No, that's Santorum's bill.
Oh, yeah, that's coming out of the House.
That's a different bill.
Oh, my mistake. Okay,
that's a different bill.
Yeah.
So as I said, some 85% of us, our ancestors came as immigrants. 12% came on slave ships, so they didn't come here voluntarily. But whatever it is, their ancestors were not part. I mean, unfortunately, we need to do a show on Native Americans. We really haven't done one, but they're a small percentage of the American citizenry. So most people came here seeking a better life. And
they were illegal aliens when they got here.
Some were legal, some were not, but it's hard
as
to
far
deny.
As far as the Native Americans were concerned, they were all illegal.
Well, that's true. As far as the Natives are concerned, absolutely. Not only are we illegal, but we took their jobs.
You're right.
Yeah, we took their country.
Speaking of taking Americans' jobs.
We took their land and we took their lives. So, we did pretty bad there. But the heart of the issue is that the people who are arriving today, are seeking the American dream just like generations and generations.
Well, they're seeking
what
we claimed at
they're
one
seeking
time
a better
may
life.
Have been the American dream.
They're either trying to escape religious or economic persecution in their home countries and they're trying to make a better
they're
life.
They're doing what human beings do. Excuse me. They're doing what nature does, what animals,
people
what trying
to get
do.
A better life.
Plants grow towards the sun. Animals, herds of animals, once they've grazed all their land, they move to an area where there's more grass.
Sure.
People, when they're in an area, when
there's no opportunities. Yeah,
When African Americans in the 40s and 30s were facing Jim Crow and no jobs down south, they migrated to an area where there are jobs. It's natural. You have a country on one side of the border, an area on one side of the border where there's no work and no jobs, and on the other side, there is. Human beings, people, plants, all life wants to survive, and you're not going to survive without food. They did the natural thing, which was migrate to an area that will give them a higher probability of existing and passing DNA on to the next group of human beings that look similar to them.
And frankly, prior to about 1900, there were virtually no laws on immigration. I mean, anyone who came to this country got to be here. And even the laws that were in place when my great grandparents came, which was about 1900 or so, where basically you couldn't be an anarchist, you couldn't be a polygamist, you couldn't advocate the violent overthrow of the government.
That's so much for the Republican Party today. I mean, the Tea Party's out of here.
That I mean, there really wasn't that much, and you couldn't carry some massive communicable disease. Mm-hmm. That was about it. And then, of course, we really started cracking down in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. So people who say, well, my ancestors didn't come here legally, you can say, you know what, the laws were a lot easier to follow then. Today, we have long, long waiting lists for immigrants, and it's very hard to get here legally.
Yep.
And in any case, but those that do overstay their visa, and by the way, interestingly, most people do not cross the border from Mexico. I don't even know how many people realize this, but 45% of undocumented immigrants in the United States came here legally.
Yeah.
And
yep.
overstayed their visa.
Yep.
A lot of people don't realize that.
Yep.
So basically, almost half. So you have a kid, let's say you got a 4-year-old kid coming with his parents legally, and they overstayed their visas because they want to live a better life or they want their child to have a better life. And this 4-year-old doesn't speak the language of his home country, grows up in America, plays baseball, attends American schools, and maybe not even realize that he's not a citizen until he reaches close to 18. What President Obama wants to do, what the DREAM Act would do, is legally codify that if that kid goes to college or serves in the military, then they get a green card, they get a pathway to citizenship, and maybe pay a small fine. President Obama, since that bill wasn't getting through Congress, and since it didn't get 60 votes to get past the Republican filibuster, got 55, by the way.
Did get
a majority, you know, in the Senate and the House. Got a majority in the Senate and the House, but we all know majorities aren't enough
The Republicans always, they claim a 41-seat majority in the Senate.
Exactly. So because it didn't, he decided to have selective enforcement. And I want to talk with you, Garland, as a cop, about selective enforcement. But basically, the administration said, we don't have the money.
All enforcement is selective enforcement.
Exactly. We don't have the money to deport every one of the millions of people who are undocumented here. So we're going to go after the bad guys. We're going to go after the criminals, the people who've committed violent crimes or drug dealers or things like that. We're going to go after them. And the kids who, I mean, we're not even, they didn't even exempt the parents who overstayed their visa. But the child who came when they were four and had no decision-making capability, we're not going to punish them.
Right. And send them to a country where they don't even speak the language of the time.
That's exactly right. Which seems to be a very modest proposal. But, of course, the Republicans called foul. And it was really interesting watching Mitt Romney this week, because this is the guy who was to the right of Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum on immigration. Newt Gingrich said, moderate Newt Gingrich, said, if someone's been here 25 years – and hasn't broken the law, we're not going to deport him. And Romney said, yes, we are! That's not enough! We're gonna take that grandmother at 93 and stick her in, you know, back in Mexico by herself. Whatever. He was to the right of Newt Gingrich, which is hard to do.
What's his name? Perry, remember?
Right,
they came
Rick
down
Perry.
On him.
Rick Perry.
Perry was like, you know, it's kinda heartless.
Yeah, Rick Perry, yeah.
I didn't even know he had a heart.
He said, in Texas, you know, we have lots of people, Latinos, that have been here since they're three. They've lived all their life in Texas. And get them a chance to go to college and make something of themselves and not be in some gang where they can't get work legally. They're going to get work illegally.
Yep.
And he said, yeah, you don't have a heart. And, of course, Mitt Romney was to the right of Rick Perry in the Republican nomination fight. Now, shake up the Etch-a-Sketch.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Here comes the nomination.
He's brand new, isn't he?
And now he won't quite say he was wrong then. He'll just not talk about it. They asked Mitt Romney six or seven times, he had called the Arizona law a model for the nation.
That's right.
His words, a model for the nation. So right after the Supreme Court opinion, they said, well, what's your view?
The nation of Italy under Mussolini, you know, Spain under Franco. Yeah, sure.
They said, Mitt, was the Supreme Court right or wrong? What'd you think of the opinion? And the official answer was, Mitt has no time to talk with you today.
I would expect that he would say, yeah, they were right or wrong.
Right or wrong or somewhere in between or not.
Yeah.
He refused to comment. It has now been, 24 hours, 36 hours since the decision came down. He still refuses to comment. Marco Rubio was funny, too. I watched him on Meet the Press on Sunday. And so he said to Marco
funny
Rubio.
Funny is a word you could use.
Strange. They said to Marco Rubio, David Gregg, and he's pretty good on Meet the Press. He said to him, okay, you basically advocate the DREAM Act that Obama advocates. No, I don't advocate the DREAM Act. Oh, you don't advocate the DREAM Act. So you're against the DREAM Act. Oh, no, I'm not against the DREAM Act. Well, wait, are you for it or against it? Well, Marco Rubio said, immigration is a very complex and detailed topic, and really there are things that are good and things that are bad, but Obama really hasn't done the right thing, and he hasn't gotten the country behind him, and there hasn't been a bipartisan solution. And Democrats said, well, wait a minute.
What's the right thing?
What do you want to do? And he said, well, you know, I have my own plan. Okay. And so Gregory said, what is it? And then Rubio said, this is really hilarious, he said, well, I don't believe in rushing to come up with a plan and putting it out there just to have a plan, because then you might get something not done. And I'm thinking to myself, immigration is not a new issue.
Well, you know what?
This
I'm
is not something right. that, oh, this is a new idea.
Yeah.
This has been an issue for decades, for centuries in America.
And especially when he says, I have a plan. What is it? Well, I don't want to rush to this thing. That's not push over the, you know.
But Obama's wrong.
Yeah.
Obama's wrong. And he said, well, do you disagree with Romney? And he said, well, you know,
He can't possibly disagree with Romney.
No,
Romney doesn't say anything.
He said, it's a very complex issue and we all need to get, and Gregory must ask him 10 different times, you know, what's your view? And all we got, well, it's really complex. As I explained in my book, you know, my parents were a son of immigrants. He never answers.
Right. It's so complex, I don't even understand it. That's
exactly
I'm working on it myself.
So at the end of the day, here we come into November, And let's face it, one of the main reasons George W. Bush beat John Kerry in 2004, he lost Al Gore in 2000.
Well, I wouldn't say he beat, but he was close enough to steal it.
For the margin of stealing in Ohio.
You're right. Yeah.
Is because he got about 40% of the Latino vote, which is a Republican high because George W. Bush supported the Dream Act.
Yep.
So did, frankly, a couple dozen Republican senators until Obama supported it, and then, healthcare, they had to change their mind. So, Mitt Romney now is polling 25%. Of Latino voters. And let's face it, Nevada, Colorado, I mean, these are states that may very well, New Mexico, swing states.
Unless they can disenfranchise all of them, which is definitely on the agenda, Mark, and it may very well be the issue.
It's a potent political issue, which is why Mitt Romney is backpedaling as fast as he can. But you know what? Latino voters.
I don't think Mitt Romney's pedals even go forward. I think he's got a bicycle where the seats turn around backwards, and he just, in order to go in any direction, he has to backpedal.
And on the top of the bicycle, rides his dog.
You're right, yeah. That's
absolutely
right. We got to give out the number.
We do. The number is 202-588-0893. You can join in this discussion. Let us know what you think about immigration, any of its aspects, whether it's the Dream Act, the Supreme Court, or Romney, or Obama. Let us know what your thoughts
are. Or Terry. He's not here. You can talk about him like a dog.
It's a great time to talk about Terry because he can't respond.
Yeah, that's it.
202-588-0893. We'll be right back after this.
A good bargain is hard to find these days. Unless you are shopping at WPFW's sizzling summer sale. It's that time of year again. Get ready for prices that are hot, hot, hot. All items are just $5, and that includes CDs, DVDs, books, and more. Join us at WPFW Studios, located at 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., in the City Paper Building on the second floor. The sale will be on Saturday, June 30th, starting at 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. For more information, call the membership hotline at 202-588-0999, extension 344. That's 202-588-0999, extension 344. Be there!
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Who is that mystery voice? I don't recognize that voice.
He's gone. He's gone. Dr. Sagassi has left the building. This is Mark Levine. I'm sitting here with
Garland Nixon.
And we are able to get so much accomplished without Terry
because
here.
We have an empty chair. There is no Terry Kester tonight.
That's right. You just have us, but we certainly have you joining in on the topic of immigration, 202. Actually, the lines are full. I shouldn't even give out the numbers.
But keep trying.
But whatever you want to talk about with immigration, I don't care whether it's the political aspect or the Supreme Court aspect or, you know, your views on whether illegal immigrants take jobs or the Dream Act, whatever it is, we want to hear from
you. We can give out the number because there's a delay and there'll be time for them to get on. 202-588-0893.
That's true. The lines are full and we're glad because this isn't a topic we deal with a lot on the Raucous Caucus. We want to hear from you. Let's go to Jerry. Jerry, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hi, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say about the Dream Act, one of the things you have to realize, one of the effects, is that it infuses about, 700,000 people into the job market, which is already depressed, especially for African Americans. And the other thing that it does is that it provides an incentive. I mean, you've dealt with, one group who have been given this chance, but it just sets the clock for another group. What are you going to do another 10 or 20 years down the line when more people come illegally and bring their children?
It's a very fair question and one we should answer. I got one answer. I know Garland may have another. My answer is this. First of all, I don't think you're adding 700,000 people to the job market because they're already here.
Exactly what I was going to say.
They're already
Not able to work legally.
Well, actually, they do work. They may not be technically able to work legally, but all you have to do is go to any hotel or look at any gardening service or look at any contractors. It's not hard to find undocumented people.
That are working under the table, which means they're not paying, you know, Social Security and taxes and things like that on it. And there's a lot of issues.
Interesting. A lot of them get a fake Social Security number and do pay into our Social Security system.
But they just can't get anything
out of it. Here's how I see your concern, Jerry, and I also want to give Garland a chance to respond too. The concern is, and it's a fair concern, that undocumented immigrants undercut the wages of American workers. And I think that's a fair concern. I think it's a legitimate concern. And I don't think it's a racial concern at all. There's definitely racist opposition to immigration, but that is not. That's a fair question.
It's a moral question, too.
It's a fair question.
If you wait long enough, you'll be rewarded.
Well,
the people who are legally waiting, they're just suckers, right?
I'll tell you what.
Why should they wait?
Well, I'll respond to that, too. But let me respond to your first point, and then I'll get to your second point, okay? My response is this. To me, if you force employers to treat undocumented immigrants fairly. In other words, you go back. I remember there was a whole discussion when Hilda Solis, the labor secretary, there was a complaint by conservatives that she was making sure that illegal immigrants got minimum wage. And they said, how dare you help these people get minimum wage? When she did that, she wasn't just helping them. She was actually, I would argue, helping American workers as well. Because if employers know that they can hire undocumented immigrants at half the price of the minimum wage, and they can work them 15 hours without overtime, and they can make them work on weekends, and they can employ child labor. If none of our labor standards are enforced with them, then it actually leads the employer to be more likely to choose the cheaper undocumented immigrant than it does the American worker. So I would actually argue that it harms American workers more. And as far as the future, and I'm going to give Garland a second. As far as the future, I would argue that we've always been a nation of immigrants, that we got a population that's growing older, they've got a Social Security system that's got to feed the baby boomers, and I would argue that one of the things that makes America great is the constant infusion of new blood, new ideas, new creativity. Go ahead, Donald.
I'm going to say this. You know, back in the 80s under the Reagan administration, it was, you know, black people on welfare, they're the ones that are destroying this country, and now it's illegal. The undocumented workers are one. We have a history in this country of blaming the people at the bottom. It's like, let's say Microsoft was to go, you know, bankrupt, and you were to go to the Microsoft headquarters and go down to the basement and say to the janitor, you destroyed this. Last time I checked, the corporate thieves at the top of the job ladder went to China so they could pay $2 a day to people. We're going to blame somebody who's working for $4 or $5 an hour here, when the fact of the matter is, by the time they got here, they had shipped all of our jobs over to China. So the idea that we're going to blame the person at the bottom who wants to pick grapes for a couple bucks an hour, when the fact is, they didn't have anything to do with us losing our jobs. The big corporations moved to China. They took our jobs and sent them to another country. Let's not blame the people at the bottom. Let's not forget. Let's not get those at the top who ship our jobs to countries where they can pay them practically nothing. Let's not let them get off the hook and blame the poor person at the bottom who doesn't have anything, who has no financial power, no political power, who has no power whatsoever. They're not at fault here. And I cannot blame them for any issues with our jobs. We should have jobs.
I also don't see the economy as a zero-sum game where there's a limited number. There's a million jobs out there, and they're either going to go to American citizens or they're going to go to undocumented immigrants. Many undocumented immigrants come here, and they come up with some great ideas, and their kids grow up in school, and they become great doctors and engineers, and they create their own jobs. They create their own economy. I would argue that the United States of America is probably the only country on earth that is not based around an ethnicity. I mean, France is based around the French, and England around the English, and Thailand among the Thais. Because we come from so many different cultures, I would argue it's the mix of cultures and, frankly, the hungriness of people that move here to seek a better life.
But you're really going to lead to a better economy. You're really going to anger the hard right with those those types of comments, man. You're talking multiculturalism
makes America great.
I strongly believe that. Somewhere there's a member of the Tea Party who's just spontaneously combusted and his head blew up.
Maybe so. But thank you for your call, Jerry, and I do think it's a fair concern. Let me go to Tesfa, longtime listener of the Raucous Caucus. Hello, Tesfa.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening, Tesfa. Tesfa is an immigrant.
Good evening, my brother.
Yes, I am my brother. I am an immigrant, and let me tell you an experience, not some kind of opinion, experience. I was a refugee in Djibouti, and I got accepted as a refugee into the United States. Before I left Djibouti for the United States, the U.S. ambassador in Djibouti came into a hall where there were lots of us refugees waiting for him to make a speech for us. And he said, thank you for coming into my country. And he made a very good speech, encouraging us and giving us all sorts of advices. And then after I came here, I got my first job. I came in June, and in August I got my first job, but I didn't know where to go and buy a uniform. I was sitting at a Roy Rogers eating French fries. An elderly American citizen came to me and asked me, what do you need? I didn't tell him. I didn't ask him. I even didn't look at him. He came directly to my table and asked me, what do you want? I didn't know how he knew I was in need of something. And I told him, I got my first job and I need a uniform, but I didn't know where to go. That senior citizen said, come with me. I paid, I went into his station wagon. He took me to Seven Corners and took me into Montgomery Ward. I bought my uniform, and he dropped me at my apartment, and he even didn't take my phone number. And he didn't give me his phone number. He needed nothing from me.
That was your guardian angel, Tesla.
Hold on. Let me finish. Look, these two gentlemen, one ambassador, another one a senior citizen, made me look at America with through a glass which is respectable and lovable. If you treat people from other countries in your own country, you will only get respect and admiration, love and good wishes. But if you mistreat people like the Supreme Court does, like Arizona does, all you do is isolate yourself. This world is looking to the United States as a place to take refuge, as a place to help in the fight for freedom and human rights and justice. If U.S. turns against the rest of the world and supports dictators like my own and the one at the Desert Squad in El Salvador, or
Tesla,
that's
a beautiful story about you coming here. I really do appreciate it. And I think it shows how, you know, we're constantly condemning, and we should condemn, all the awful things that America's done. But Tesla reminds us the beauty of this country for immigrants and the magic of it for people who want to start over free from persecution and free from economic opportunity. And I'm reminded actually what the Bible says. One of the great lessons in Genesis for Abraham is because Abraham treated strangers with kindness, he was rewarded by God. And that we have to remember the stranger in our midst, because they say we were once a stranger in a strange land. So remember the stranger and treat them well. And I think as a basic principle, it's a good one to live by. All right, let's go on. It's 202-588-0893. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Oh, welcome. I'm glad you brought the Bible. Interestingly enough, I think if God empowers the American Indian, then we have a real issue with profiling and illegal aliens having stolen their land.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right. Now, we're guests in their land. We must remember that we dishonored every treaty we'd made with them.
We did.
Thus dishonoring ourselves. No, this is just a red herring, the whole issue, why the Senate works on a bill to give corporations, have the American taxpayer pay for their expenses. In other words, this is being done behind the scenes. Information necessary for a senator to make a decision has been withheld from him by people he asked for the information for. He has a top secret clearance, and this is going to be ran through while we're canards being discussed right now. It is a canard because we need those Spanish people to work in our workforce, And it's just,
you know,
I'll
tell you,
issue.
In Alabama, they've passed a very stringent law, like in some ways even worse than Arizona's, and suddenly they had no one to pick their crops.
That's quite true. That's what I'm saying. It's a canard. And the real issue is what's being done for corporate favors. Now, what we need to do is, if you want to, from a commander of armies, is to make petitions and recall these representatives and actually do it on blocks. Do it. Don't march. Don't get photographs taken of you. Empower yourself through the legal system. Make an amendment disenfranchising corporations of any right to have any corporate status.
Well, we agree with you.
They're going to abuse our citizenship. They were actually an appendage of us.
Well, you know, we agree with you on corporations. Yeah. We've done many shows on that.
And there's something that we have when we talk about people, when we talk about undocumented people not being able to work, when we talk about passing laws where employers will be punished if they have undocumented employees, the one thing we always have to keep in mind, and that is to every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So let's say there are 14 million undocumented people here. And let's just say we are successful as a country and not one of them can work anywhere. And you have 14 million
starving
unemployed people
right.
here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much you know about El Salvador, wonderful place, but they're not going back to El Salvador because there is no opportunity. That's why they came here in the first place. So even those who advocate laws so that the undocumented people can't work, what you're doing is, if you are successful, you are creating a tremendous group of people, a large group of people who are unemployed and unemployable, but still have all the basic human needs. And believe me, humans find a way. You get hungry, you know, they're going to find a way to eat. It's the human nature is going to take its place. If a guy has two starving children, he's going to do what he has to do to feed them. So we don't want, you know, people better be careful when we talk about creating an environment where undocumented workers can't work, and then we have a gigantic group of people here who can't work.
All right, 202-588-0893. Let's go to Cecilia. Cecilia, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hola, buenas tardes.
Hola. Buenas tardes.
So I just wanted to give a shout out to all the activists that were so brave by doing sit-ins at the Hart Building, at Obama's different district offices, to bring to light the fact that these deportations have actually gone up under
right.
Obama.
They have gone up.
You know, the people that really were brave to put their not just risk arrest, but risk deportation to get this issue on the forefront. And I'm kind of insulted, actually, by the crumbs that Obama is throwing at people.
Cecilia, I don't know that they're crumbs. I mean,
by this. And I think Latinos are way smarter than this. We're not satisfied with this concession. And there needs to be a pathway to citizenship, and there needs to be an amnesty.
Well, here's the thing. No one supports the DREAM Act more than I do. But what Obama said was that he was going to concentrate resources on people who've committed serious crimes. Now, I don't see a problem with that part of it. Do you, Cecilia? I mean, he's saying if you're under 30 and you haven't committed a crime, you're home free. That's not crumbs to me.
A work permit, that's not a path to citizenship. And people that have been here, you know, since they were four, you know, two, three, four, five, there should be a path for citizenship.
Well, there is in the DREAM Act.
Let me take a different perspective. Let me take an alternate perspective as an African American, and I'd like your comment on this. As an African American, whenever I hear somebody say, "Well, I don't want to take crumbs," it reminds me that it took us about 100 years to get the Civil Rights Act, and that there were people saying to Martin Luther King, "Do not accept it unless you get the Voting Rights Act," which they got a year later, and Martin Luther King said, "Let's just take what we can get now." And then when we can get a little bit more, let's get a little more. The history of the civil rights movement was you can call it patience or whatever, but to continue to push forward, you know, kind of a warrior mentality. You get a little bit of ground, you hold that ground, and you take some more ground. So when you say crumbs, if I'm hungry, and I'm starving, and somebody walks up to me and says, here's a quarter of a biscuit, I'm not going to say, I don't want that, and look, you got to bring me a whole steak dinner. I'm not eating that quarter biscuit. Trust me.
I'm eating a quarter biscuit. I'm saying we have to keep up the momentum.
Oh, we agree with you there. Yeah. We definitely are not saying this is enough.
People, you know, and I know people are all up in arms about this, like, concession, which, I mean, I can...
I don't consider a slight concession.
This election can be boiled down to two words: floundering and pandering.
I see, Cecilia.
Because, you know, before this was like an election issue, deportations had gone up under Obama, been more deportations than under Bush.
How about another way to look at it? And that is this: how about giving credit and saying there were activists who went out and fought? And as a result of that, they pushed the president to the point where he had to do something. How about instead of saying, oh, well, he didn't give us enough, which, okay, oh, you always want more. There's an old saying, the perfect is the enemy of the good. But saying, look what we accomplished. See, in the Civil Rights Act, that's what the people would do. They would fight, and when they get something, they'd say, look what we accomplished. They would turn and look at all those people who fought for civil rights and say, look at that. We accomplished something. That shows that we should continue to fight, and we can get more. It's a different perspective. It's a perspective that acknowledges that you had a victory and that inspires you to move forward to even more victories,
right,
instead of getting angry because you didn't get everything
that
you wanted.
The glory went to the activist who put the pressure.
We agree. We agree with glory to the activist.
The glory goes to the activist, not Obama.
Well, I give glory to both. I give honor to both, because I'll tell you something. I think it was significant. I think that if you have a kid who's 17 years old, 18 years old, and they're afraid to go to their high school graduation because if they're living in Arizona, they're afraid of showing up in public, they might be deported. It actually gives peace of mind. If you have not committed a crime, it doesn't matter that you don't have your documents, you don't have your papers. If you haven't committed a crime, Obama says, you're safe as long as I'm president. Now, would I prefer a permanent solution? Of course I would. The DREAM Act is a permanent solution, but you can't
get a permanent solution.
Because even though a majority of the Senate and a majority of the House voted for it, the Republicans filibustered it. To me, this should inspire more people to vote for the Democrats, more people to vote for Obama, so that we can get a filibuster-proof majority.
Right.
I don't consider it crumbs. I consider it significant.
He had a majority.
No, he didn't. He had a 55-person majority.
No,
that, you know, if we just the whole Democrat-Republican paradigm right now is just a joke.
Cecilia, you didn't have a 60-vote majority.
Social movement.
And here's the thing about it. He didn't have the left. I agree. Democrat paradigm majority is false. It's left and right majority. The left never had control.
They didn't have 60 votes.
Right. They had 55 votes voted for it. You had people like Ben Nelson.
So vote out Ben Nelson. Yeah. But don't complain about the 55 that voted for it.
And let me say this. Yeah, he didn't do enough. He said, I would love to pass the DREAM Act, but I can't get it through, so I can't give you. You're hungry, Garland. I'd love to give you a steak dinner, but I can't get you a steak dinner. All I got is a biscuit. I'm going to say, I'll take the biscuit.
And I'll keep fighting for that steak dinner.
And thanks for the biscuit, by the way.
Yeah.
I understand
where you're coming from. But
I mean, it's what he should have done, but it's like, you know, I don't know about giving people so much credit for things they should have been doing anyways.
I gotta tell you, so many politicians do bad things that pass
the Civil Rights Act and give people voting rights when that's how it should have been.
But I still give Lyndon Johnson credit. You're right. It should have been done 100 years ago. It should have been done in 1865, but it
should
wasn't.
Should have been done in 1619
okay,
is
fair
what
enough,
I'm thinking.
Fair
you
enough.
Know?
But
it was.
I still give Johnson credit for it.
And it didn't. And not for me. Even that. LBJ did it. Yes, they should have done it. But he did suffer some political consequences.
Oh, no question
Obama
about
could
it.
Suffer some. To me, if somebody does something, I say thank you to that person, which A, encourages them to do more, and maybe B, encourages others to do it. Because if he does something for me, and I look at him and just say, well, you should have done more, then really, what incentive does he have? But if I say, thanks, man, that's what we're working on.
It's politically impossible for him to function if he chooses to keep denying people their basic human rights.
Well, it's not Obama's choice.
He said he'd pass it if he could.
It's not Obama's choice.
He couldn't get it through.
The people who are denying are the Republicans who are filibustering.
Shut down Guantanamo and
well, that's a different issue.
Oh, yeah.
But thank you for your call, Cecilia. I really do appreciate your view. We can talk about Guantanamo another day. I promise we'll go there. Let's go to Max. Max, welcome to the show.
Yes. Hello.
Hello, Max. I'm good. Talk to me.
I got some things to say about the immigration problem.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, you know, when first I come to understand the immigration problem, I thought, you know, what could be done? What steps we should take as a nation? But now I believe the question is not what we need to do about the immigrants. The question is, what will they do about us?
What will who do about who?
What will the immigrants do about us?
In what way?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, clarify.
Well, they are, you know, they have culture.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Language. Wonderful culture. I love their food.
They have dance. They have language.
Great music.
Wonderful.
I love
America's a melange of cultures.
They have great food.
Merengue.
You know, they come with their. You know, they could.
Sounds like a lot of good things.
I don't like the way people say that they only adopt themselves to the trades. They can adopt themselves to any occupation.
Max.
Okay,
the history of America is people from cultures all over the world coming and making the melting pot, the mosaic of American cultures. We're a country that goes to Finnish saunas and eats Mexican food and then orders Chinese and then goes to an Irish pub. I mean, that's what makes America great. Thank God they're bringing us their culture. Thank God for all the different, thank God for jazz and African American culture.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But, you know, it just seems to be a lot more of them than
yeah,
any
you know
of the
what?
Other.
You I know, gotta tell you. Let me just respond.
The Native Americans said that.
Hold on.
You need to
Max.
Go,
hey, hang
you
on one second.
And, you know,
Max.
Really,
Max.
You know,
let me tell you something.
Their culture.
The only people who were right to say that were the Native Americans.
That's right.
There are a heck of a lot of white people. Since then, the English immigrants complained about the Germans in 1840. Then they complained about the Irish in the 1880s. Then they complained about the Italians and Jews at the turn of the century.
You know,
and they complained about the Asians.
What I will complain about, though, is the census. When they do the census...
What's wrong with more Mexican Americans?
Hispanic on the census. All they have is white, other, black, Asian... They don't even put Hispanic on there.
Because
you know
it's not
why?
A race.
Because they don't want us to know just how many Hispanic people are in the
country.
It's
counted. It actually is on the census, even though it's not a race.
Right.
It's actually a category out of the census.
Oh,
and I have no problem with...
Did you say it wasn't race? I don't
no, Hispanic is not a race. It's a culture. There are Hispanics of every race. There's some black Panamanians. Yeah. A good friend of mine actually is from Panama, and he's darker than Garland here.
Spanish on the... On the census.
It is on
Check
the
it
census.
Out. It's not there.
Yeah, it is.
Well, do you think that there's a conspiracy? So you think there's a conspiracy here going on here?
Oh, Max.
I think that there's maybe like in California, it's what, 60-70% Hispanic?
No.
I don't think it's quite that high.
I think they're plurality.
Like
I think they're about 45%.
So
what? I don't care. Max, let me just say this, and then I got to move on to one last caller. I don't care what the racial makeup of America is, as long as America still, and frankly, a lot of times it doesn't. That's what we fight for. But if America stands for justice and freedom and opportunity and democracy, I don't care whether it's white, black, Latino, Asian, Martian, you name it. Frankly, as I said at the outset, what makes America great is we are not one ethnicity. The French are limited to the French. The Italians only got the Italians, right? We have people from every country, every culture on earth. It is the reason why I think we have some of the strongest cultures and the strongest economy on the planet. You can blame America for a million things we've done
wrong. And the best music,
man.
We
got the best
so
music,
many kinds
the best
of music
food,
here. Yeah.
The best culture. Our language is richer. You know, you look at American English Dictionary,
yeah.
It's like twice as large as any
Around
other dictionary.
The world, look, we got rock and roll. We got blues, we got bluegrass, we
jazz.
Got hip hop, we got jazz, we got
reggae, merengue.
Are you kidding?
All right, let's go to our last caller because we want to give a chance to speak. Kalanja, you're our last caller.
We left out some.
Yes, just curious, what would happen if with Greece and most of Europe in such economic turmoil, what would happen if the officers of color start arresting Europeans on the same using the same law? I'm sure the law will be ended shortly.
That's for sure. If racial profiling were applied to the majority class,
right.
It would go out the window. If white people were arrested for being white.
If black cops suddenly looked at them, you know, you look like you're from Switzerland.
Maybe
dude.
That's what Max is worried about. Max
it.
Is worried that California cops are going to start arresting white people.
Yeah, and I was a cop. You know, if African-American cops started looking, you know, you do look kind of Canadian there, buddy. What was that? he's got a bottle of moose head. Grab him.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go. He's speaking with a Quebecois accent.
He could be from, you know, France or England or... No, that's what I said.
That's the thing. It's so interesting because whenever you talk about illegal immigrants, we, of course, there are people who are undocumented from every country on earth, from Canada, England, France, but it always comes down to people from Mexico. And the answer is, look, there are good and bad people of every culture, of every religion, of every race, of every nationality.
I would say something different.
Earth.
Let's go back to the duality of man. Everyone, every person has the potential for good and bad.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Except Terry. He only has the potential for bad. He does not have the potential for good.
You only say that because he's not here.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's the only time I can get away with it.
It's true. Look, I think that America is great because of immigration. I think it will continue to be great because of immigration. And I think that, frankly, the more we treat all workers with dignity and humanity, the more likely, not just the immigrants, but the native-born American citizens will be treated with dignity as well. Frankly, they're less likely to undercut American jobs if everyone gets a fair shake.
And if we get away from the idea that one culture should be
predominant.
Even if a culture is predominant because there's more people of that culture or whatever, but that one culture is better than the other culture. They're all, that's why I say I argue against this melting pot. The melting pot that says everybody jumps in and melts their culture and takes one. I argue for the mosaic. All of the cultures can exist together and we can be successful and I can eat, you know, Salvadoran food, which I dearly love, and Caribbean food, which I dearly love.
All right. That's it for the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine with
Garland Nixon. Oh, let me give out my contact. You can email me at garlandn@gmail.com. That's Garland and then the first letter of my last name, Nixon. garlandn@gmail.com or Facebook me, Garland Nixon.
You can Facebook me on the Mark Levine fan page. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. You can follow us at Raucous DC, which almost no one uses. And finally, please.
Or at Garland Nixon. I'm Twittering too.
Thursday morning, 9 a.m., go to marklevinetalk.com for live commentary from the United States Supreme Court.
It's not going
to
be dead commentary, is
no,
it?
No, it'll
it's
be live.
It's going to be all the way live.
And the healthcare decision. Thank you to David Kelly behind the boards and coming up next is Brother Oz.
Ah, man.
We are signing off.
Good jazz.